Dr. Everett Piper here on this Easter afternoon, filling in for Eddie Huff. In the first two segments, I'll refresh your memory here, we had a man who came to Christ and Christianity out of atheism, Josh McDowell, a man who came to Christ and Christianity out of Islam, Abdu Murray, and now we have Bob Siegel. He's the host of his own radio show in San Diego, California. It's called The Bob Siegel Show. Bob, what are the call letters on that again?
Yes, it's KCBQ 1170. Obviously, from anywhere in the country, people can go to kcbq.com to listen to the live stream Sundays, 6 o'clock p.m. That's Pacific time. Or they can go to my website, bobsiegel.net, and download any of those shows at any time.
I would strongly encourage the listeners to do that. Bob has a very strong voice for the defense of Christianity, the defense of a biblical worldview within postmodern culture. He writes for the Washington Times and other periodicals, so not only can you listen to him in audio, but you can read what he writes by virtue of his periodicals and his blogs, and you can get all of that on his webpage. Bob has written a book called I'd Like to Believe in Jesus, But. I'll repeat that. I'd Like to Believe in Jesus, But. Now, again, before I give you a chance to respond to that and lead us through what that title means, Bob, especially in the context of Easter, I want to make sure that the listeners understand, Josh McDowell out of atheism, Abdu Murray out of Islam, you came out of Judaism.
Yes, and although it was a very liberal brand of Judaism, liberal Judaism's a lot like some of the liberal Christian denominations. So my parents actually raised me as an atheist, too. On my own, I became an agnostic, and I was an agnostic at the time that I became a Christian during my second year in college due to an incredible pounding from the Spirit of God. He just really, literally just grabbed me by the neck.
Now, I'm sure that you can answer this question in the context of your book and in the context of Easter. The Spirit of God grabbed you by the neck and shook you to your senses, and you started to believe in Jesus. But you've written a book that said, I'd like to believe in Jesus, but. So explain this to us and do it in the context of why do you believe in the Easter story?
Yes, that title is taking it from the point of view of the skeptic. And Everett, I've been involved in campus ministry for many years, doing my own ministries at UC Santa Barbara, UC San Diego, Arizona State, but also traveling from coast to coast, from the Northwest to New England to the Midwest. And so what I have in this book is an imaginary skeptic who's kind of dialoguing with me. And yet everything you see this imaginary skeptic say, somebody really did say that to me in real time. And the feedback I've gotten about the book has been quite amazing, because people will say that they, as they read it, in their own mind, they start to object to something, and they go, well, what about this? And just as that's entering their own mind, they see it in print. They see the imaginary skeptic making the exact same points they were going to make, which establishes empathy right away. Many people have told me that they've just handed that book to their non-Christian friends. One guy said, five of my friends got saved just by reading this book. So it's just had a tremendous impact.
All right, so it's Easter Sunday, and it's the story of the resurrection. Christians supposedly believe this story. They believe that Jesus is the Son of God and that he is still alive today because he rose from the grave. You came out of atheism, agnosticism, secular Judaism. Why do you believe this story?
Well, contrary to what many people think, Everett, when they're discussing religion, the people that started the major religions of our world did not claim to be making things up. For instance, it's very popular today for people to say, well, I think all religions are right. And they don't realize that when they make that statement, what they're really saying is all religions are wrong, because they're starting with an assumption that religions are made-up comforting fantasies. Now, if that were true, if religions were made-up comforting fantasies, it would be ridiculous for me to say that Jesus Christ is the only way to God and Christianity is the only true religion. But the founders of the major religions of the world did not claim that they were relaying opinions or fantasies or even just philosophies. They were claiming to have revelation from God. They were claiming the truth. Now, when we get to Jesus Christ, the most pivotal event in the life of Jesus Christ is the resurrection. If Christ rose from the dead, and he did, if there is historical, overwhelming, historical, credible evidence that he rose from the dead, and there is, then everything Jesus taught and everything Jesus believed would have to be true. Why? Because if Jesus claimed to be God incarnate, and he claimed no less than that, the term Son of God in those days didn't mean what it means today. In those days, that was a claim to deity. In those days, claiming to be the Son of God was the same as claiming to be God, and Jesus actually made that claim in those words, too. He called himself I Am, which was the exact name that God gave Moses at the burning bush in the Old Testament when Moses asked God what his name was. And so if Jesus was claiming to be God, but he wasn't God, then when he got crucified, that would have been the end of it. God is not going to raise a false prophet from the dead, and only God has the power of life over death. So if Christ rose from the dead, then that gives immediate credibility to everything he taught. One of the things he taught was that the Old Testament was true. The Old Testament wasn't called the Old Testament yet. They called it the Law and the Prophets, or they called it the Scriptures. But that means the stories of Moses, Abraham, some of the things people are seeing in this series that's on TV now, Noah and the Ark, Adam and Eve. Jesus believed in all of those. So we've kind of taken a shortcut, and we've automatically verified everything, even in the Old Testament, simply by the miracle of the New Testament. Then Jesus' disciples, his followers, who became the apostles, were given special authority by Jesus. And he said to them, everything I've taught you, the Spirit of God is going to bring back to your memory. And these men, or close associates of the men, wrote these documents that were collected into what we call the New Testament. So we've suddenly authenticated the entire Old and New Testament from the resurrection of Christ. So that's, and I'll talk about why I believe in the resurrection in a moment, but at first I wanted the audience to understand how pivotal, how very important the resurrection is. And we don't mean that Jesus rose spiritually, or we don't mean some kind of symbolic resurrection because those who follow Jesus remember him and his philosophy lives on. We mean that 3 days after his execution, his body literally rose from the dead. And if that happened, then everything else we read about in the Bible is just as true.
So you believe that? You believe that he rose from the dead? You believe that it's historically verifiable?
It is historically verifiable, and one can have a relationship with the Spirit of God that'll kind of cement it in, but it is historically verifiable. The early Christians living in the second century when the Romans first began persecuting Christianity were so confident of his resurrection that one man named Justin Martyr wrote a letter to the Roman Emperor Antoninus Pius to defend Christianity against Roman persecution, which was very severe. And he said, if you have any doubt as to the truth of these matters, I urge you to look at the Acts of Pilate. The Acts of Pilate was a report that the Roman governor of Judea, Pontius Pilate, made. Pontius Pilate himself was convinced by the miracles associated with the resurrection and wrote an actual letter to Emperor Tiberius. Now, unfortunately, this
So Pilate believed this?
Pilate did. Not while Jesus was alive, obviously, but shortly afterwards. And he wrote a letter to the Roman Emperor Tiberius at that time. That letter was put in the Roman archives. Now, unfortunately, that letter has been lost. Perhaps it'll be rediscovered someday, like the Dead Sea Scrolls were. But what we do have is four documents that haven't been lost, which refer to it. And one of them is this letter from Justin Martyr to the Roman Emperor Antoninus Pius in approximately 150 AD, saying that if he had any doubt about the miracles associated with the resurrection of Christ, all he had to do was go to the Roman archives and consult the report of Pontius Pilate. Now, nobody talking to a Roman emperor is going to invite him to go check the Roman archives for verification if he wasn't extremely confident that those documents existed.
We're going to take a commercial break right now, but I want to wrap up this first half of your segment, Bob. You came to faith in Jesus Christ because of overwhelming proof in the resurrection of Jesus, even to the point where Pontius Pilate himself was affirming the facts of Jesus's proven deity by virtue of his resurrection. This is Dr. Everett Piper filling in for Eddie Huff on this Easter Sunday. Stay with us during this commercial break, and we'll return and have further discussion with Bob Siegel about the resurrection of Jesus and the proof of Christianity. Dr. Everett Piper here, filling in for Eddie Huff on this Easter afternoon. We've had a real treat so far. Josh McDowell in the first segment, Abdu Murray in the second. Josh coming out of atheism toward Christianity and Christ, Abdu coming out of Islam toward Christianity and Christ. And now we have Bob Siegel telling us his journey, sharing with us his journey out of coming out of secular Judaism, atheism, agnosticism, label it any way you want, I guess, Bob. You came out of that family background and cultural background.
Yes, a Jewish family that was culturally Jewish but not religiously Jewish.
Okay, fair enough. Now, you were sharing with us before the break the extra-biblical proofs for the resurrection of Jesus. That is fascinating. I think a lot of people out there have never heard this before, so
yes,
go further.
And I do want to say that the biblical proofs, what we read in the Gospels, they're just as historical. Luke, for example, was a historian in his day that was sponsored by a Roman dignitary named Theophilus, and he examined evidence and talked to many sources. The other three Gospels were written by eyewitnesses, Matthew, John, and Peter, of course, did not write his down, but he dictated it to Mark. So I'm not at all taking away from the credibility of those historical books, but because they're in the New Testament, because the New Testament has a leather cover on it and gold-plated pages and a special red-letter edition, people kind of look at it differently. And so the skeptics that I talk to want to see things outside of the New Testament. I mentioned one of them, the Acts of Pilate, which again has been lost, but there are four documents which talk about. Let me mention another one. These are the writings of Josephus. Josephus was a Jewish historian, actually a Jewish general, captured by the Romans, lived the rest of his life in Rome, and wrote the history of the Jewish people for a Roman audience. And in his book called The Antiquities of the Jews, in section 18, he's giving a comprehensive list of the deeds of Pontius Pilate. Well, obviously, if Jesus really existed, it would be found in that place. Now, Josephus was not a Christian. We know that for a fact. And yet Josephus talked with a casual paragraph about Jesus. And since he wasn't a Christian, we wouldn't necessarily expect him to say much more about it. But in this paragraph, he mentions that there was a person named Jesus who did miracles, who was executed under Pontius Pilate, and who appeared 3 days later, having risen from the dead, to his followers. Now, what's interesting, Everett, is this passage is disputed by many. They'll say, well, we don't have the original works of Josephus. We only have copies. Well, that's true of everything in the ancient world. If you want to claim that we need the original copies of something from the ancient world, you've just thrown out all history. You've thrown out the writings of Socrates. Well, Socrates didn't write anything, but
Homer and Plato and Aristotle. It's
Plato
all lost.
Plato talking about Socrates, Aristotle. You've thrown out the annals of Julius Caesar, Tacitus, Suetonius. You've thrown out everything. But the idea is, well, since we have copies, some Christian must have inserted that. There's no textual evidence to that effect. The extant tradition, extant meaning copies of manuscripts, in every place where we have Antiquities 18, Section 3, where we would expect to find that, it's there. So the bottom line, it's there. If somebody wants to claim it was an interpolation, a forgery from a Christian, the burden of proof is on them. Scholars are indebted to Josephus all the time for information about the ancient world. When you read Bible commentaries, have you ever wondered where we get most of this information? Josephus is one of the chief sources for something like that. But one of the arguments, Everett, is, well, he says Jesus rose from the dead, so he must have been a Christian, and yet if Josephus wasn't a Christian, and that's a fact that we know from other sources, then he couldn't have written it. And yet these same skeptics will say to me, if Jesus really rose from the dead, then somebody other than a Christian should have written about it. I mean, if you really had an impact of such major proportions, how could that have escaped the notice of a non-Christian? So I tell them, well, okay, yeah, you're right. So here's exactly what you're asking for. Here's somebody who wasn't a Christian who says Jesus rose from the dead. They go, oh, well, that doesn't count. I said, well, why not? Well, because only a Christian would claim Jesus rose from the dead. That's actually not true. Josephus was a Pharisee. He believed bodies could resurrect and pop out of the ground. One could believe that Jesus resurrected without numbering themselves as one of his followers. So we have the testimony of Josephus. Another fascinating one is found in the Talmud. Now, I say this delicately, because my people, the Jews, throughout the centuries, have been treated horribly in the name of Christianity. They've been accused of being Christ killers. Of course, Jesus died for all of our sins, so we could make a case that we're all Christ killers. The Romans were the ones who actually nailed him to the cross, but it is true that the Jewish Sanhedrin turned Jesus over to the Romans, so it certainly was a collaborative effort. And yet in the Talmud, which is a series of rabbinical writings dating back to the time of Jesus, it was originally handed down orally and then got committed to writing, there's a book called Sanhedrin 40, and in 43, Sanhedrin 43, Section A, they mentioned that Jesus was executed on the Passover for two charges. One of them was sorcery, and the other one was apostasy. Well, apostasy is the easier one to understand. An apostate was a blasphemer. Jesus, as I said in the last segment, claimed to be God. For an ancient Jew to claim to be the God of Israel was the most blasphemous thing they could say. Under the law of Moses, they would deserve death, unless the guy happened to actually be telling the truth, unless he really was God. Of course, they didn't believe he was God. So it's understandable why they executed him on the charge of apostasy. But what I'm intrigued about is they also call him a sorcerer. Why? Because although Jews today, for the most part, do not believe in God's spiritual enemy named Satan, Jews in Jesus' day did. Mm. And if you did not like a man, and you wanted to warn people away from his movement, and yet you could not deny the fact that this man did miracles, what you would say is, oh, well, he didn't do that by the power of God. He did that by the power of Satan. And so, yes, we have a very derogatory statement about Jesus that Christians may not like reading. But from the pure point of historical evidence, this is great news. Mm. This is fantastic news because we have a source with a bias predisposed against Jesus. People are always saying, well, his disciples, they don't count. Show me somebody who could talk in detail about Jesus, but the men that followed him around for 3 years, lived with him, ate with him, they don't count. Nobody would hold anyone up in history up to that scrutiny. And yet, okay, so be it. Well, now we have people with a bias predisposed against Jesus, and yet they acknowledge that he lived, he was executed, and here we have a source outside of the New Testament from enemies of Jesus verifying that he did miracles. So those are two other sources, the writings from the Talmud and the writings of Flavius Josephus, the historian.
Obviously, if his enemies wanted to call him crazy, call him a lunatic, claim that he was a fraud, they would have quickly gone to those labels rather than the labels of a sorcerer, a man who performs miracles, and in the case of Josephus, even admitting that the man actually rose from the grave. So they didn't have the weak argument. They had to go with these supernatural arguments and still try to discredit him.
That's right. And when Christians claim that he rose from the dead, if he hadn't risen from the dead, why didn't they produce his body?
Yeah, exactly.
His body was supposedly guarded by Roman soldiers. You know, the Romans, if they could conquer the whole Western world, they had enough on the ball to guard one body.
A dead body at that.
A dead body at
that. With no followers other than 12 individuals who scattered into the midnight.
Yes, and the Romans guarded things on ships. I think probably some of your other guests probably went into some of that.
Yes.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing.
You've got about, we've got 1 minute. You got 60 seconds, so I'm going to give you 30 seconds to tell us why the message of Jesus is exclusive and not necessarily a postmodern inclusive message. You've
okay,
got 30 to 60 seconds.
People say, why could there be only one way to God? Well, folks, what is so illogical about God coming down to earth saying, hi, I'm God, and I, God, am the only way to God? He came down so that we can be forgiven of the selfishness that we commit. That is the definition of sin, selfishness. Although we can change our actions, we do not have a button on our side which we can push to change our hearts. So we need the forgiveness of God offered through Jesus Christ and the Spirit of God to come into our hearts to help us overcome our sins. And that, as I mentioned before, is also the way that ultimately this stuff will be verified. The history is interesting, but the history is a trail of breadcrumbs that provides evidence. If you want it literally proven to you, you must have this relationship with the Spirit of God.
Bob, I really appreciate you joining us this Easter afternoon. Happy Easter to you. I encourage all the listeners to follow you on the Bob Siegel Show. Again, Google it, and you can follow him routinely in his weekly show. Bob, we're grateful for everything you do to defend the cause of Christ. I'm thankful for your intellect, your consistency, your integrity. You're a good friend. Happy Easter to you.
Everett, it's always a pleasure, and I'm grateful for everything you do as well.
Everett Piper here filling in for Eddie Huff. We're going to take a commercial break, and we'll have another guest joining us thereafter. Happy Easter. Be right back with you in a few minutes.